From 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, welcome to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you and from Eskenazi Health. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buscelli Wallerab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
I'm Sharon Gamble. Welcome to The Art of the Matter. This week, we feature a Butler University-trained writer whose new novel is set in rural Indiana in 1960, and we'll listen in on a rehearsal of Calder, the musical. And don't forget, we'll have that arts calendar we call
What Will We Do?
All that and more right after the latest news from NPR. Welcome back to The Art of the Matter from 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. I'm Sharon Gamble. The Cabaret, Indianapolis's long-running showcase of great singers, has a new home. After a number of seasons at the Columbia Club on Monument Circle, the Cabaret has a new temporary home at Cook Theater in Indiana Landmarks Center. I invited their artistic director and CEO, Shannon Forsell, to talk highlights of their winter-spring season and dish about their new venue.
You have a new interim temporary venue.
We do, and we're so excited about it. We're going to be at Indiana Landmarks Center in their gorgeous Cook Theater. And, you know, what's interesting is that we actually wanted to be in that space all along, and a lot of folks might not know this.
Oh, really?
But the timing was such that it wasn't going to be finished in time. You know, we needed a space a year before this room was finished.
Right.
So it's funny how things come around. But we're very, very excited about it. It's still very close to downtown, but in many ways much more accessible. It has free parking, which is different than what folks have experienced before.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot easier to get to. So those are some of the new benefits. Gratuity is not included, which it was before.
Mm-hmm.
So those are some good changes. And so I think folks are not going to feel a lot of change. It's going to feel very, very intimate and very, very similar to what their experience was before. It's such a great space, and we're thrilled to be partnering with Indiana Landmarks Center.
And full disclosure, Indiana Landmarks, the statewide historic preservation organization, is where my day job is. So
right.
If I say, yeah, I love that venue, I am a little biased, but
right.
But it really does. Cook Theater has spectacular acoustic. It's a big wooden room, so why wouldn't it?
Yeah, we were just there testing all the sound, and it just sounds so good, and it's just such a great space, and it's just been wonderful.
So you always have an amazing schedule, but the caliber of people that you're bringing in, you must be planning this. How far out? How early did you start working on the season that's about to launch? Three years ago?
It depends on the artist. You know, so we get some big headliners like Billy Porter. We had to schedule him. You know, it was beyond a year ago where they'll say this is when his window of time is. So it's really kind of different with each performer. Some know their schedule in advance. Some don't, because they might be going into a Broadway show or they might be going into a movie. And
sure.
So some are easier to book closer to the time. Some further out, because they'll only schedule a certain amount for tour time. But a lot of times we try to schedule at least 9 months to a year in advance.
Now, people who program big halls like Clues Hall or Elliott
mm-hmm.
Hall on Purdue's campus often work out a schedule so that if an artist is coming too near Indiana,
right.
he or she can do a gig in Cincinnati, come up and do one in Indianapolis.
Mm-hmm.
Does it work out that way for your performers ever?
Sometimes, but not often, which is interesting because we have been talking about that. Now that we've started it's called routing with, we have a sister cabaret now that we helped start with the Philharmonic in Columbus, Indiana.
Oh.
So on Thursday nights, oftentimes, the performer will go to Columbus and then come to Indianapolis. And more people are starting to do that. And now we're helping to start some other cabarets, one in Detroit, and just really helping folks get started. So there may come a time soon when the routing for cabaret will happen. So sometimes, depending on the artist, we'll know that in advance and be able to book them according to their tour. But it's only an hour and a half flight from New York City, so
right.
it's not as relevant sometimes, too.
No, but I love there's – and when you go full-fledged, and we'll talk about that, when you get to all these spin-off cabarets
right.
started, it's greener because you bring somebody
yes.
out one time and then mm-hmm. they're moving among cities.
It's a better deal for them. They
yeah.
get more work, and we might get a better price because we're offering them more shows.
Yeah, of
yeah.
course. All comes back to the money, doesn't it?
It does.
So Brian Stokes Mitchell, I love that the New York Times called him the last leading man. And he is crazy flexible, versatile.
Right. Yeah. First of all, he's one of the best singers of all time, and he is so charismatic. You know, his role in Shuffle Along wasn't really that large, but it was so – like, he comes out, and you're like, that guy is a star.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even in a small, role, he just takes up the stage. And we've been trying to get him for several years, and he's been very, very busy. So we're very excited to have him. You know, obviously he's been numerous Broadway shows, and to see that kind of, and he recently did a show at Cafe Carlyle. So he's recently started to do cabaret. But to see somebody like that, you know, within 20 feet of you, and to see that kind of talent is really magical, and we're really looking forward to having him.
And the what I'm excited about seeing and hearing him, part of it is that some people just sing. Not that there's anything wrong with just
right.
singing, but I mean, this dude scored TV shows
mm-hmm.
and scored Trapper John M.D. for
right.
for a number of years, and just kind of did that yeoman work behind the scenes, so he knows music from inside out.
Right, and he's such an amazing actor, which is really important to cabaret. I mean, he really makes every single song a mini cabaret. You know, a story from start to finish and a character from start to finish. So he's able to take all those talents and put them, you know, focus them into the show that makes it really special.
Mm, fantastic. And he's not the start of your season. Forgive me. You're actually starting the season with a collaboration, a university collaboration.
Yes, we have. You know, a lot of folks don't realize that we do a lot of educational programs as well. And we want to show the next generation of cabaret stars. So we have an educational partnership with Ball State University. They have such a great musical theater program there. And as a part of our partnership over the last few, you know, 6 years that has grown, they actually have two courses now in cabaret performance.
Wow.
Yeah, and it's required to graduate. So it's really exciting. So they work, this cabaret course works with these select students, teaches them all about cabaret, and then it culminates in a show at the cabaret. And so on January 20th is that performance where you get to see the stars of tomorrow from Ball State University. And that's at 8:00 on the 20th. And that'll be great. We can kind of do a show right before the grand opening of our season performances, which is with Brian on February 11th.
Fantastic. And, you know, it's a jam-packed season. I'm sorry we don't have time to talk about everybody, but
right.
I want you to tell me a little bit about Judy. Did you say her last name? Kuhn?
Kuhn.
Kuhn.
Mm-hmm. Judy Kuhn is, you know, a lot of folks won't know her name. That's what's interesting about a lot of the folks that we bring here.
Mm-hmm.
But what they will know is that she's a 4-time Tony Award nominee. And she is currently starring in Fun Home on Broadway. So those two things let you know that she's a talented gal. So she was, you know, she starred in Chess, Les Miserables. She's in, you know, Fun Home now. So she's a Broadway star. But her show is going to be music that's more in the Great American Songbook, evolving to new music, all through the family of Richard Rodgers. So it's Richard Rodgers, his daughter Mary Rodgers, and then their son Adam Gettle. So obviously Richard and Mary did more traditional musical theater,
mm-hmm.
like Oh, What a Beautiful Morning, and things that are, you know, some really fantastic music. And then Adam Gettle does a little more contemporary Broadway. So she's melding all those together to show the tradition of these fantastic musical folks and doing their music. So she may throw in a few of her big Broadway pieces, too. I can't imagine.
Well,
she won't.
And that's what's kind of fun about your role is you know the general outline of what somebody's going to
mm-hmm.
do, but
right.
it gets to be new for
it's,
you.
It's a surprise for
too.
Us, too. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
And as a performer yourself, I'm guessing that while you rehearse a show and you have a set list and so forth, you might change something depending
right.
on how the audience
mm-hmm.
responds to you.
Yeah, and a lot of performers do that. And a lot of performers, if they have two shows, especially because some folks go to all the shows if they're a fan of that person. So a lot of times they will change up each performance just slightly or a lot, depending on how they feel the audience and how many people are going to be coming to the second show.
Yeah, absolutely. We're out of time, but there's so much good stuff to talk about. But I want to talk about someone who might not nearly as famous as Billy Porter, but somebody who I think soon will be, and that's La Chanza.
Yeah, La Chanza is she is Tony Award-winning star of Color Purple, the first Color Purple, and she also starred in If Then mm-hmm. with Idina Menzel and Once on This Island. And her show, she's a powerhouse, you know, to be in all those shows. She's a powerhouse performer. Yeah. So she has a brand new show called Feeling Good. And what's interesting, too, for folks that, you know, may not know these people, all of these people, we have video of all these people performing on our website, on thecabaret.org. So if they think this might sound interesting to me, then they can kind of go on and get an idea, because each show is very different. Her show is going to have a lot of Broadway belting, soul, R&B kind of tinged Broadway type stuff, as opposed to Judy Kuhn, who's Great American Songbook. So folks can get online and see, is this the show that I want to see? Is this for me?
Shannon Forsell is Artistic Director and CEO of The Cabaret. Its winter-spring season features Brian Stokes Mitchell, Billy Porter, La Chanza, and many more performers. And you can see those videos Shannon was talking about and learn about their new venue at thecabaret.org. Gwen Banta studied writing at Butler University and has gone on to a career as an actor and writer. Her new novel is called The Fly Strip, and it's the story of a 17-year-old boy named Weed Clapper who's relocated by family circumstance from a metropolitan setting out east to a small, rural, racially divided Indiana town in 1960. I rang Gwen Banta up at her Los Angeles residence to find out how her college years in the Midwest inspired The Fly Strip.
Most people write about their own childhoods, either about themselves or at least the era in which they grew up in novels. You most assuredly did not. How did you decide? First of all, how did the character of Weed Clapper come to you? Or did a situation, a particular small town era in Indiana, did that come to you first, or did a character come knocking on your door?
That's an interesting question, Sharon. I actually dreamed the scenario and the character.
Really?
I did. I went to bed thinking about a novel that I might want to write. And, of course, we do write about things that we know.
Mm-hmm.
And I had lived in Indiana when I was young in a small town. Of course, this is a fictitious town about which I wrote, but I had lived there. I loved Indiana. I think I gravitated there mentally because I love Indiana and the small town feel and many of the people and some of the great colorful characters I met there. And I was thinking about it one night before I went to bed, and I actually was recalling some events. Many of the events in this book are true, and it started to gel into a story. And when I woke up, I saw the storyline, but I kept seeing it through the eyes of a 17-year-old boy.
Hmm.
Young man, actually. He's a young man. He's not at all a boy, as you know. He's very mature, and I kept seeing it through there. But then the bits where, you know, he came from the East Coast. Of course, I was born and raised on the East Coast. So I think it was just my life coming together to tell this story that I felt needed to be told.
Lovely. And he's thrust into a kind of a crucible. He comes into this small town, and having had friends who were different from himself, he had a close friend who was Jewish, he had a close friend who was black, and he comes to Indiana, and that's not normal at all here.
Yes, at that time, and remember, 1960.
Sure.
At that time, of course, there was great social and racial unrest, not just in Indiana. The story happens to be set there, but it was everywhere. But Weed, having come from a a bit larger town, well, quite a bit larger town, Scranton, Pennsylvania, had never been exposed to the kind of racial prejudice that he was exposed to suddenly in moving to the Midwest. And at that time, the KKK was still active, perhaps a bit more underground, but still active as it is in many parts of the country. I don't ever want anyone to think that this is just about Indiana. It happens to take place in Indiana, but this was the voice of the 1960s. This is what was happening in many places everywhere. And, of course, he had never dealt with it before, so he has to decide how to deal with it and to overcome his fears in order to become the man he feels that his parents always wanted him to be.
And I don't want to give I want to talk about this carefully because I don't want to give too much away.
Of course.
But he's had some significant personal losses that just add to the pressure of his need to find where he fits in the world.
Exactly. Exactly. He's overcome tremendous personal, or is trying to overcome tremendous personal loss. And he is still in the middle of very, very raw pain. So he's looking for peace and solace, but he doesn't find it. Instead, he finds an even greater challenge. And he's not sure if he has the muster to live up to it, to meet that challenge. And thus, he turns to his lovely young teacher for support.
And I also want to mention this is a wildly funny book. It's heartbreaking, maybe because it's funny. There's a great deal of humor along the way.
I'm glad you saw that. Thank you very much. I love Weed. I love the character of Weed. And he is such a bright young man. And, of course, he handles, like many comics do, they handle their pain with great wit.
Absolutely, absolutely. I have to ask you this. Has a next novel come to you in a dream? What are you working on now?
Actually, I've been thinking about the sequel to what's going on with the fly strip, and I'm not quite there yet. I have an idea where I want him to go.
Ooh.
Do you want me to give you a little
hint? Yes,
yeah,
please.
I'm thinking I want him, and I won't tell you who is included and who somehow gets omitted from the story and why, but he's probably going to join the peace marches down south.
Find Butler University-trained novelist Gwen Banta's new work, The Fly Strip, on Amazon and at brick-and-mortar bookstores. You're listening to The Art of the Matter on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. I'm Sharon Gamble. For food and drink lovers who want to support a great cause, Zubilation has become a must-attend event. Tickets for this year's Zubilation go on sale February 1st, and Jolene Ketzenberger gives us this sneak peek with restaurant co-chairs Emily and Matt Lyle.
It might seem kind of early to talk Zubilation, but since the tickets do sell out, and people might want to be planning ahead, it seems like, oddly enough, the right time.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So I guess, first of all, the question is, what is the theme for this year's Zubilation?
This year's theme is going to be the tropical adventure. So we're excited that the zoo will be bringing in some macaws this year. They're actually already in place. They're just weaning and getting ready.
Oh, so we have baby macaws right now.
We have baby macaws right now. And what's exciting about the macaws is they're going to be free flying over the zoo.
So during Zubilation?
We're hoping during Zubilation. We will see with their flight patterns. But you can expect in the summertime to be able to look up, see the macaws flying over the zoo.
They over, will the, be, over the whole zoo? Not,
over the
not,
whole zoo.
Not hemmed in anywhere?
Not hemmed in anywhere. So we were very excited about that. When they are housed, they'll be with the lemurs. So in that area, I think it's back by forest, but we were very excited.
And in coordination with the new macaw exhibit, the zoo is opening what they're referring to as the Bicentennial Park, which will be, as you enter the zoo, a massive undertaking that will almost create a false canopy.
It's an indoor-outdoor structure, so it's made out of all natural materials. There will be some rain gardens included, and it's just going to be a really exciting experience, especially because it will be open for Zubilation.
Oh, my goodness. So we'll be able to see that if we go to Zubilation.
Correct. You will.
You will.
So now, Zubilation, if if people might not be familiar with it, describe it a little bit for me so people might get an idea of what this fundraiser gala is.
Well, Zubilation, and it's presented by in coordination with Indianapolis Power and Light, is the largest black tie fundraiser in Indiana. Last year, the event itself raised more than $2 million for animal care and conservation programs, specifically at the Indianapolis Zoo.
So this is a big deal.
Oh, it absolutely is. It absolutely is. It's the largest fundraiser in the state and one of the largest for any of the privately owned zoos in all of America. So,
wow. So now how many people come to Zubilation? Because it does get quite crowded.
It does get quite crowded. Approximately 5,000 people attend. And that isn't including the 70-plus restaurants.
So you have all the people that are serving the food and working the event as well.
Exactly. We also have 13 bars that are available. So you have bartenders. We have a lot of different concerts going on. So we have the musicians and sometimes dancers.
So tell me about the restaurant booths and what people can expect for that.
So we have over than 70 restaurants that participate. A lot of people don't know is that the restaurants donate all of their time and all of the food. So I think last year we had over 250,000 entrees that people could try out. They are small plate size, but it's anywhere from appetizer, entree to dessert. The restaurants that are there are all really competing for best entree.
That's right. So there's a competition going on,
there
too.
There is a competition, and it's quite a stiff competition.
Mm-hmm. It is a little, it is an extravaganza, right?
Oh, certainly is.
There's so much food, so much to drink, so much to try.
But you're exactly right. Zubilation, on its surface, is completely about indulgence and celebration. But you get to indulge and celebrate for a cause that does so much wonderful.
Now, it raises lots and lots of money for the zoo, which is particularly important for our zoo.
Absolutely.
Well, now, tell me where people can look for some more information about Zubilation, the zoo, the new app, that sort of thing.
Absolutely. Well, first and foremost, the Indianapolis Zoo's website is a great wealth of information, and especially to see all the upcoming projects and new animals that are coming. We've had some exciting new announcements with the orangutans that recently came in last year. And so I'd certainly direct people to the zoo's website. Otherwise, on any of your smartphones, simply go into download an app and search Zubilation. Luckily, it's the only, there's not too many of those events like this across the U.S., so it's pretty easy to find.
You can follow the zoo on, obviously, Facebook or Instagram. You can also follow Zubilation specifically on both social media networks, so you get information all the time. I think it's a lot of fun to follow Zubilation because they'll post pictures that they take throughout the night. So if you are lucky enough to be captured, you can find that picture and tag yourself in it.
So it is a fun event in early June, but tickets go on sale in February. So keep checking that website at the Indianapolis Zoo to find out when you can get them because they do always sell out, right?
Every year, and quite honestly, usually pretty quickly. So want to encourage anybody that hasn't been to get out there and attend and see the amazing work that the zoo's doing. But don't think about it too long because there won't be tickets after February, I can promise you that.
You can hear Jolene Ketzenberger's Eat, Drink, Indy Saturday mornings at 11 on WFYI HD2, The Point. The best-selling show of the 2016 Indie Fringe Festival makes its world premiere as a full-length musical this month, and Jill Dittmeyer is here to tell us more. What'd you find out?
Sharon, people loved Calder the musical so much during the Indie Fringe Festival that the authors have decided to expand it and make it into a full-length play. And it's all about American artist Alexander Sandy Calder. Now, a lot of people know him for his whimsical mobiles, but he was really a fascinating man. And so I stopped in at rehearsal the other night to talk with the creators and the cast about this show. Fringe Basile Theater is busy tonight as the cast of Calder the Musical practices steps and rehearses lines created for them by Indianapolis arts veterans writer-director Tom Alvarez and composer Dustin Klein.
Klein fell in love with a book about Calder and showed it to Alvarez.
We thought that we could turn that story into a musical, and he sat down at the piano and started playing melodies, and I thought, well, you know, I'm a writer. I've never written lyrics, but I have a theater background. I'm a critic. I've been seeing theater for years, so I bet you I could do it. And the musical was born. And Alexander Calder, as it turns out now, after we've developed this, what better time to do a musical about a man whose life was all about creating this whimsical world of innocence. And, you know, escapism is coming back, especially with what's going on in the world. So we think we have a show for its time.
He was in Paris in the 20s and 30s with all these, you know, celebrities. And they made a wire circus, and I immediately thought of this wire circus, how we could like bring it to life on stage with dance and music.
Their original version was a smash hit at the Indie Fringe Festival, so they added more songs and an important dance sequence to this version.
As we do this, the songs tend to come out faster and faster, like as we write together, which is great. Now Tom gives me the lyrics and I put it to music. And in the Fringe version, we couldn't feature the mobile part because there were so many parts of his life, and that was an important part. But there's a dance. It's a ballet where the dancers are the mobile, moving.
Saint Victor, Saint Victor.
To add cast members too, as many of the Fringe actors went on to other shows. Logan Moore plays Sandy Calder.
He just follows his dream. You know, he's a guy that, you know, in the beginning of the show, he's a kid who got bullied all the time, and he had this special gift. You know, he created art, you know, and just piddled around with wire, you know, and both of his parents were artists. So, you know, like any kid who looks up to his parents, you know, he kind of fell into that and got bullied for it. So, you know, and then his dad just, he wanted him to be more successful and an engineer and stuff. And so he kind of got pigeonholed into something that I don't think he really felt like he wanted to do.
Moore says he knew nothing about Calder, but discovered a personal connection.
He doesn't want to do engineering anymore, and he wants to do art and it just live out his dreams no matter what. So that's what he does. He drops everything behind and he goes to Paris and just starts living his life as an artist. So, I mean, it kind of speaks to like what I'm doing right now, you know, just here in Indianapolis being a theater guy, you know, just that's my dream, my passion.
The 14-member cast includes four teens who play the roles of Calder and his wife as children. 11-year-old Jordan Picar is delighted to be part of this cast.
I am one of the Peggy Calders.
What do you have to do with that?
We sing a song with young Sandy Calder, and we have a little monologue talking to the mother about Sandy getting beat up at school, and then we are in a ton of dances, so.
He was an artist too, you know, he actually was quite political, but he expressed his politics through his work, which he felt he wanted to create this world that all, it was all about, he didn't have any kind of pretensions. He hated the idea of talking too much about it. So he didn't even call it art, he called them objects. And we want to be uplifting. It is family friendly, so anybody could see it. Would take away that sense of innocence that he brought and joy.
That sounds like so much fun. What a fascinating guy.
And they have expanded it, like I said, to 90 minutes. They're going to take an intermission in the middle. And it opens on January the 27th. The good news about it is it's going to run through February the 12th. So you have a lot of opportunities to see this maybe several times because they've got so much going on in the show. I think you're going to want to see it more than once.
You know, every time I'm in Chicago and see the big Calder sculptures on the streets downtown, I think I need to read more, learn more about Calder. So it's
going to be like a real aha moment for people, too.
I love
which
it.
Is exciting.
I love it. And you know what? No cocooning allowed. You know, there are so many wonderful things going on stages around town and in museums around town that we don't want you to just curl up with a blanket Netflix.
No.
Nothing wrong with doing that, but you got to get out occasionally too. And that means it's time for some ideas on our calendar we call
What'll we do?
What else do you have? What else is going on?
Well, we've got a couple of last minute things for this weekend. So if you're still trying to uncocoon for the weekend, we got a couple things for you to go see. Tonight, January 21st, and tomorrow, January 22nd, The Puppet Man continues at the Theater on the Square. It's Andrew Black's play, all about real-life events that took place in a prison in northern Ohio. It's a very powerful program, so you can still stop in to see that. And also at the Indie Fringe Theater, the Magic Festival wraps itself
Winter
up,
magic.
Too.
Don't disappear, though.
No.
Hey, back in rotation with The Puppet Man at Theater on the Square stage, Clutter by Lou Harry, a new play, all about people at crossroads of their lives. The full title of the play is Clutter, or The Moving Walkway Will Soon Be Coming to an End. So if you pictured getting off of that beltway at the airport and figuring out what to do next, you kind of have the gist of that play.
Also, on exhibit right now at the Healing Arts Indie Space. They're located at 805 South Meridian, they're right across the street from Shapiro's downtown. And it's a wonderful exhibit by Savannah Norris. She's a fiber artist and an instructor. And I stopped by there the other night when the show opened, and she's created all these different macrame hangings and dream catchers and plant holders, and it kind of makes you think back of your days, maybe when you were in Girl Scouts and you did macrame, but hers is much more intense. But she also uses all natural fibers. She lives on a farm. They have Angora rabbits, so she used some rabbit hair in some of them, which is amazing. She takes crushed marigolds from her garden to make this beautiful khaki color that she dyes the fibers in. She uses beet juice to make this beautiful pink color. And in addition to coming to see the exhibit, she's going to be holding classes to kind of show you how you can do this, too. So this might be another kind of fun thing to do throughout the winter months here. Go to healingartsindy.com to find out more about when you can see the exhibit and if you'd like to sign up for some of those classes.
That explains why your fingers are different colors tonight.
Exactly.
You've been
You thought I was cooking.
Playing with those natural dyes. Hey, speaking of natural dyes, you'll hear more about this next week on The Art of the Matter. But the IMA has a program called The Chemistry of Color. It's part of their CSI, which doesn't stand for Crime Scene Investigations. It stands for Conservation Science Indianapolis. It's kind of geeky, but I say that with great respect. What it is Chemistry of Color is an exhibit that explores the relationship between chemistry and art by discussing the discovery of colorants used by artists throughout time. And everything from crushing flowers to sourcing things from juice out of insects.
Yeah.
And some other intriguing things. So that's going on.
Nature
actually,
in a whole new way.
Indeed. Through early December 2017. So if you like the science of art, that's something to check out.
Open now and continuing through February 17th at the Marion University Art Gallery, which is over there on the Marion University College. It's Refugee Art. And this is a wonderful exhibit. It features creative works by Burmese, Syrian, and Somalian refugees who are all part of the Catholic Charities Refugee and Immigration Services. And there's also an art therapy group as well. So they've all combined their work together. And it's in the Michael Evans Center for Health Sciences, which is one of those brand new buildings over there on Marion University. And you go up to the second floor, and there's this beautiful gallery space up there. Now, the hours are kind of interesting, so you do need to check out the Marion University .edu website to find the particulars on times. But it's definitely a show worth seeing.
If you like jazz, I have a couple of recommendations this week. This Sunday night at the Jazz Kitchen, don't forget Rob Dixon and friends covering a great and influential album by John Coltrane. And then Tuesday evening, the 24th at 7:30, an evening with jazz violinist Joel Smirnoff and friends. This is the annual cabaret concert put on by the International Violin Competition of Indianapolis, and you can learn more about that at violin.org. Great fun jazz music led by violin with food and beverage brought to your very table.
Speaking of food, Sharon, Devour Indy starts up here again.
Yay.
On January 23rd, runs through February the 5th. All different kinds of menus and prices at a variety of restaurants downtown, devourindy.com.
We love Devouring Indy. It's all about the food and beverage. Another concert that is influenced by Latin American music is Concierto en Tango. It's the Indianapolis Chamber Orchestra's next offering, and it's next Saturday night at 7:30 at the Schrott Center for the Arts on Butler University's campus. And you can expect to discover the rhythms and colors of Latin America interpreted through mostly classical music. You can find out more about that at icomusic.org.
And if you still want a cocoon and we haven't done it for you, then go to the indiearts.org/guide. It's the Arts Council of Indianapolis's complete guide for all things to do here in Indianapolis. Or join us next week when once again we'll come up with our list of activities on the calendar that we call
What'll We Do?
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and central Indiana. Your host is Sharon Gamble. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202, or you can email us at aotm@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on WFYI.org.
You're tuned to The Art of the Matter on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. Local pianist and musical director Ginger Stoltz's work with the Indianapolis Children's Choir and in productions such as Pippin, Two Orphans, and Heathers is a juxtaposition to her other professional life as a chemist. Contributor Pete Brown invited Ginger to talk about her two very different lives.
In looking at a lot of your involvement in these different productions over the years, the term musical director keeps popping up over and over and over. And I'm wondering if you can describe what that means. I'm assuming there isn't a textbook definition of you know, do's and don'ts, because I'm assuming you wear a lot of hats. But what does it look like to be a musical director?
It's essentially immersing your whole self into a show. And then it's once you get closer to production, in most shows I like to be the pianist as well, because not only do I have to immerse, but then I have to understand the core of the entire song. So a lot of that is through a piano accompaniment. And then obviously finding musicians that are going to fit the books relatively. And then as needed, conduct the pit during the actual show. And then there's also rehearsals with cast and with the band. So it's a very big role. For instance, Heathers, I received the score and played through it myself. And it was murder. But then, you know, as you keep rehearsing with anything, it gets better and gets better. And then when you add in the musicians on the back end of it, it starts to get stronger. And then connecting with the cast through what we call sits probes, where everybody sits down and literally plays through the music all together, band and the actors. It really comes together. And then that couple weeks before production, it just falls into place, and then it takes off from there.
Yeah.
So, yeah, musical director role is not an easy thing to do, but it's definitely a fun challenge.
Yeah. And looking through some of the organizations you've worked with, we're talking about Theater on the Square, Footlight Musicals, Indianapolis Civic Theater, the Indianapolis Children's Choir, and looking at productions that you've been a part of, like The King and I, Heathers the Musical, Jesus Christ Superstar, Pippin, Clue, Rocky Horror Picture. I mean, it's a diverse assortment of shows, a diverse assortment of organizations.
Absolutely.
And one of the most shocking things for me was learning that your degrees are in
chemistry and biology, right?
Yes.
So I think there are a lot of people that wouldn't have pegged that. But I also know that there are a lot of people who have a 9-to-5 that has nothing to do with the arts that also really enjoy the arts.
Right.
And would like to be involved in the arts. Tell me a little bit about how your personal balance of a 9-to-5 as a chemist, how does that interact with your evenings and weekends as a musical director for the last decade?
So it's been challenging, but my fiance now and her family are wonderfully supportive, and even my family as well has been wonderfully supportive. My mom will always say, well, don't wear yourself out. But I think I have a drive that I need to meet and continue. So when I find, you know, new shows that pique my interest, I want to get involved, and I let those that are involved know and say, hey, you know, I'm free. And then I say to my fiance, so are you okay if I am gone? Like, Heather's was, I think, a 4-weekend run. Like, so I'm not going to be home all the weekends in July. And literally, I love her so much. She said, see ya. Because she'll have, you know, her personal time to do things she wants to do.
For people that have interests and some talents and they're not sure how to get started, if they wanted to be involved in a production or try to learn more about opportunities, what kind of advice do you have for people looking for those opportunities?
There's actually a wonderful Facebook page entitled Indie Theater Community. And they post a lot of auditions. They post a lot of things they need for shows, like if they need musicians, if they need people to help run tech. And then they also, sometimes theaters will have sales of like some of their production items that they don't need anymore. So like this ornamental thing they had in this one scene and they don't need it. And so that's kind of how it's a really great page, because then you can find out all of the shows that are going on and then those that do need that help.
So having been to New York, and I'm assuming other larger cities to see productions, how do you feel like the local theater scene is in Indy? Are there opportunities for people that are interested in working in the industry? Are there opportunities for people who just want to either or volunteer or just be involved in other ways?
For those looking to get more into the industry, like similar to New York City, it's obviously very tough. But actually, you mentioned Jesus Christ Superstar earlier. Mm-hmm. And a young guy that was in that production is now Raul on Broadway.
Oh, wow.
And so, you know, I contribute part of, you know, the vocal directing that I had to do during that show to him actually succeeding as a career. Now, did I think he was going to be Raul on Broadway when he was, you know, a young guy? Mm-hmm. And, you know, it still is a very proud moment because he took the time and dedication to make that career happen for himself. Mm-hmm. But then to get involved in local theater, it's one of those, just look for it. And the Indie Theater Community page is a great, great resource for that.
Thinking back as a fan of musical theater, do you have a top musical production you've seen or a piece of musical theater that just is like, you love it every time you see it, it turns you to butter, and you would watch it 100 times if you could?
As my fiance says, I am such a softie. So we go to New York City because my dad used to live in Queens. So I've seen a lot of recent productions. A couple of that have stuck with me. If Then, and I got to see the original cast on Broadway, which was fantastic. Mm. I mean, the great Idina Menzel. Hello.
Yeah.
But then a production that's kind of stuck with me and, you know, makes me think about, you know, current society is the show Allegiance, which had George Takei and Leah Salonga in it. Mm. I know all of the music. I know the ending and everything. But still, there I am in the theater crying. And my fiance looks over at me and is like, you know what happens. And I said, I know, but it's still so sad.
And speaking of shows that are going on, what's coming up in 2017 for you?
I have a show with the Carlton Community Players. It's a cabaret, part of their cabaret series. And then in March, I am working with Brebeuf Jesuit on their production of Chicago. And that is at the end of March. And then non-show production, I accompany a lot of local high school students for solo ensemble competitions. Mm. So January, February, I kind of reserved for solo ensemble.
And where can we go to learn more about what you're up to?
I do have a page on Facebook. It's literally Ginger Stoltz, S-T-O-L-T-Z. And I'm always willing to talk with anybody. I'm my father's daughter, so I can talk to anybody.
Contributor Pete Brown with actor, musician, and chemist Ginger Stoltz. Every week, a Cultural Manifesto's Kyle Long talks five songs with someone from our community. Here's this week's journey.
I'm Kyle Long from Cultural Manifesto. I'm here with Louie from the band Louie Louie, and he has five songs to share with us today. Louie, thank you for being here.
Thank you, Kyle.
Before we listen to your first song, I wanted to ask you to describe the sound of Louie Louie to Art of the Matter listeners.
It's a very simple, complicated sound. It's rock and roll doo-wop, bubblegum funk, just a whole lot of hip shaking. And we're just trying to get everybody just moving and grooving.
Yeah, it's a great band, one of my favorite bands here in Indianapolis, so I appreciate you being here today. What is your first song for us?
It's the guy that I'm really interested in right now. His name is Alton Ellis, and the song is Willow Tree. And it's one of my favorites. It's one of the first songs I've listened by him. It seems almost melancholy, but I think it's a good message, because he's saying that he doesn't need someone, that willow tree, to cry for him anymore, because he's got what he needs now. Eternally, 'cause I have found the love I've searched for. Number two, I'd like to do a Narcissia song. It's, Love is Ice Mountain, you know.
Love is the highest mountain, reaching to the sky. I will climb that mountain.
And do you want to say anything about who Arcesia was?
Just a man that was, I know that the plot of the album was him, I think, recovering from or dealing with his wife passing away, which was the love of his life. I don't know, was it like originally 200 pressings?
Yeah, this was a privately released record. And Arcesia was kind of an older guy who had been kind of like a big band type of singer of standard songs, from what I understand. He was not like a rock and roll musician, but he got hooked up with these young guys and made this crazy record. Let it snow.
Third song is from an Ethiopian group, the Roja Band, and on this session they actually have one of my favorite singers, Kuku Sebsibi. It's just really, I just love her voice on it, and the video is awesome, and the band is just tight.
You said this was something that you grew up listening to in your parents' music.
Yeah, this is my parents' music. Yeah, because like I didn't grow up listening to really any kind of American music other than when we drove to the store. But it was a lot of Ethiopian, Eritrean music.
And what's your fourth song?
Miss Coco Taylor, Wang Dang Doodle, All Night Long. Tell Automatic Slim, tell Razor Toten Jim, tell Butch and I Toten Nanny. Whenever I want to get back on track, like, you know, when you want to get a mean song, like that's one that always felt like it just charges me up when I hear it. And it's not even like they're playing loud or electrically. There's just something about it. It's just deep and guttural. It's like they're like singing in the mud, you know what I mean?
your fifth and final song, Louie from Louie Louie.
All right, this song is very dear to me. It goes out to a very special person, Miss Alyssa McIntyre, Alton Ellis. You said it again.
If your little bit heart seems hurt and every little thing you do absurd, and I make it up to you.
And Louie, you have a show coming up very soon. Your band Louie Louie will be playing with Pravada January 28th at Pioneer in Fountain Square.
Absolutely. Be there.
And if folks want to keep up with you online, Facebook is the best place to go, right?
Of course. Yep.
And it's facebook.com/ Louie Louie Inc. Louie Louie Inc.
Yep.
Anything else you want to leave the people with?
Keep loving each other and listen to good music. And thank you, Kyle.
Yeah, thank you for picking five awesome, great songs that I love. So appreciate it.
It was a quick session. I love it.
Hear Kyle's A Cultural Manifesto on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio Wednesday nights at 9 or Saturday nights at 10. Thanks for spending some time with The Art of the Matter on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. I'm Sharon Gamble, and today's contributors included Jill Dittmeyer and Pete Brown. You care about your community, or you wouldn't be listening to this station right now. WFYI Public Radio is pleased to be part of a national endeavor called Indivisible. For the first 100 days of the new presidential administration, we'll be carrying a Monday through Thursday night call-in program hosted by experts across the political spectrum. Indivisible explores different areas each evening and aims to bring Americans together for a national conversation in this time of extraordinary transition. On Thursday nights at 8, Minnesota Public Radio's Carrie Miller will examine American identity at this moment of change. Who is a part of the national narrative? Who feels left out? And how might our long-term sense of ourselves change? I hope you'll continue to listen to The Art of the Matter Saturday mornings at 7 or join us Thursday nights at 9 after Indivisible. And remember, you can always listen to and share our podcast at WFYI.org. Next week, we'll get the scoop about Yelp's February. Meet Transformational Impact Fellowship Award winner Greg Hull and get a lesson in the chemistry of color. And of course, we'll have that arts calendar we call What'll We Do? All of that and so much more on The Art of the Matter here on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Central Indiana and Indianapolis. The Art of the Matter is executive producer Roxana Caldwell, producer Melissa Davis, contributor Jill Dittmeyer, and host Sharon Gamble. The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.